A couple of years ago, my friends Alex, Drew, and I were having a sleepover during one of the last weekends of summer break. We'd been friends since middle school, and nights like this always felt like a tradition. Staying up late, eating junk food, and watching movies we'd seen a million times. Around 11:30, Drew suggested we sneak out and walk to the park a few blocks away. I lived in a small, quiet neighborhood where nothing ever really happened, so it felt harmless. None of us wanted the summer to end on a boring note, so we agreed. By midnight, we were walking down the road, laughing and joking, keeping our voices low, but not low enough. The streetlights cast long shadows, and the occasional sound of cicadas filled the air. The park was about a 10-minute walk, and nothing about the trip there felt unusual. We spent about 45 minutes at the park, messing around on the swings and talking about everything, school, crushes, whatever came to mind. It was just a typical summer night. When we decided to head back home, it was close to 1 a.m. The walk back started off normal. The streets were completely empty, and the only sounds were our footsteps and the occasional rustling of leaves. As we turned onto a long, narrow road lined with trees, we noticed headlights up ahead. A car was parked at the far end of the street, idling near a stop sign. At first, we didn't think much of it, but as we got closer, the car didn't move. It just sat there. No one else was around, and no other cars were passing through. Alex joked that maybe someone was lost or waiting for directions, but something about it felt off. As we walked past the car, we glanced at it, trying to act casual. It was an old black sedan, the kind that looked like it belonged in a bad 80s movie. The windows were tinted, so we couldn't see inside. That's when Drew whispered that they were watching us. "What?" I asked. Drew said he saw someone move in the driver's seat. We kept walking, trying to act like we didn't notice anything, but my heart was pounding. Then, out of nowhere, the car's engine revved and it started creeping forward. Alex laughed nervously and said that they were probably just leaving, but they weren't. The car slowly rolled down the road, keeping a distance of about 20 feet behind us. We all agreed that this was pretty weird, but I said we should just keep walking and stay calm. We picked up our pace, but so did the car. It wasn't speeding, just moving fast enough to match us. When we reached the next intersection, we turned onto a side street, hoping the car would keep going straight. It didn't. The car turned onto the side street with us, and this time, it sped up. "Run," I shouted. We bolted, sprinting down the street as fast as we could. The car's tires screeched as it picked up speed behind us. Adrenaline kicked in, and I felt my lungs burning as we ran. Up ahead, there was a narrow alley between two houses. Without thinking, I yelled at my friends to follow me and darted into the alley. Alex and Drew followed, and we pressed ourselves against the wall, trying to stay out of sight. The car screeched to a halt at the entrance of the alley. I held my breath, listening as the engine idled. A door slammed, then another. Footsteps. Someone muttered something I couldn't make out, but it was low and angry. Drew grabbed my arm, his grip shaking. I could hear Alex trying to stifle his breathing. The footsteps got louder as the men approached the alley. One of them shined a flashlight, sweeping it back and forth across the walls. "Come on out," one of them called. His voice was rough, like he was used to giving orders. "We just want to talk." None of us moved. The flashlight beam passed over us but didn't stop. The man grunted, and I heard him mutter, "They couldn't have gone far." "Let's check the other side," the second man said. Their footsteps retreated, and I felt a wave of relief, but I didn't dare move yet. We stayed pressed against the wall, waiting, listening. After a few minutes, the car's engine revved again, and I peeked around the corner. The sedan was backing out of the alley, its headlights sweeping across the street. It turned around and sped off in the opposite direction. We waited another few minutes, just to be sure, before sneaking out of the alley. None of us said a word as we made our way back to Drew's house, sticking to the shadows and glancing over our shoulders every few seconds. When we finally got back, we locked the door behind us and collapsed onto the couch. The rest of the night was quiet, but none of us could sleep. The next morning, we saw a post on a local community page. Someone had reported a black sedan driving suspiciously around the neighborhood late at night. The police were looking into it, but nothing ever came of it. I still think about that night sometimes, about how close those men came to finding us, about what might have happened if they had. We were just three kids looking for some harmless fun, but we got a reminder that not everything out there is harmless. And I don't think I'll ever forget it. My friends and I like to explore abandoned houses. It's always after school during the day, as the houses often have people squatting in them that come home at night after panhandling all day. Eventually, though, we got bored of houses and wanted to go bigger. Around that time, I was also the first in our group to get a car, so our area of exploration had just increased exponentially. We'd always talk about this one spot at the edge of town, the old, abandoned hospital. A long time ago, when the town was first built, that hospital was the center for all major medical needs. Since then, however, it became ancient and was replaced by modern emergency rooms and mental hospitals, so it was condemned. It sat in a part of town nobody wanted to develop anymore, though, so it was never demolished. This being our biggest target yet, we were more worried about getting caught, so we decided to go there in the middle of the night. We all snuck out after our parents went to sleep, then I went out to my car and drove around to pick up all my friends. Once we were all together, I took us to where the hospital was rotting at the edge of civilization. It was easy to get in. We just walked right through the front door. The whole place smelled like mildew and moisture. There was water damage and mold everywhere, and of course, in a lot of areas, the building was falling apart. The false ceilings were coming down, and the windows were broken, and the walls were full of holes. Nothing we weren't used to, but the fact that it was a hospital and the only lighting we had was the flashlights we brought with us made it even more eerie. Pretty much everything had been removed, so it was just barren hallway after hallway, leading to empty room after room. Only the signs on the walls told us where we were. The trauma ward, the ICU, the burn unit, and everything else in a normal hospital. At some point, I realized that the existence of squatters had completely slipped my mind until then. In all respects, many areas of the building were perfectly suited for it, but I didn't find a single piece of evidence that anyone had ever spent the night there since it closed down. The fact that not even the homeless and desperate wanted to be there was deeply unnerving. I didn't mention it to my friends, though. We were all creeped out enough. After what must have been an hour, we had searched just about every inch of the place except for one department, the psych ward on the top floor. It was sectioned off from the rest of the hospital by a set of huge double doors. We all knew this was the cherry on top of the entire building, but we hesitated to enter it. As the oldest and the one who had taken us all there, I was the go-to guy to lead the charge. The second I pushed open the door, I was smacked in the face by a stench I had never smelled before. It was like every foul odor mixed together and turned up to 11. It hit everyone else too, and we all nearly lost our dinners. The smell wasn't the only thing in there, though. At the end of the hallway, there was a light. Not a bright light, but the only one in the entire building. A dim, yellow glow was coming out of the very last room on the right, and it was flickering slightly, like a fire. I wanted to leave, but my friends forced me to keep going with them. I couldn't abandon them and get away with it, so I had to get the whole thing over with. We pressed forward, slowly and silently, creeping down the hallway. The closer we got, the more overwhelming the stench became. We ignored all the rooms on either side of us and headed straight for the source. Eventually, I could hear the fire crackling. I crept up to the doorway and hesitated again before looking in. My friends whispered at me to look, so I worked up the courage to peek around the corner, and then I saw something I'll never get out of my head. It was an old padded cell, littered with bones of all different sizes. The padding was soaked with blood, urine, and feces, dissolved together and rotten into the most toxic, disgusting filth imaginable. At the center of the room, in a rusty metal drum, was the fire lighting it all up, venting out a hole in the ceiling that had seemingly been clawed out by hand. The sight made me physically recoil and jolt back around the corner. My friends frantically asked me what was in there, but when I turned back, I saw someone behind them, standing just a few feet away. It was as close to an animal or some creature from hell as it was human, with snaggled, decaying teeth protruding from its mouth and scratch marks bleeding all over its body. It was completely hairless, and it looked like its ears had been ripped off. Even the tip of its nose was missing. The second I saw this thing, I screamed at my friends to run. We bolted away and went down the stairwell as fast as we could. After getting dumped out of the emergency exit, we ran all the way to my car, where I wasted no time speeding off. My friends were hysterical and kept asking me what I saw, but every time I tried to explain it, they didn't believe me. All I could do was drop them off and warn them to never go back if they valued their lives. This happened months ago, and since then, I can't stop thinking about it. I don't know what to do. I can't reveal this to the police without admitting that I snuck out and trespassed, but something horrible is happening in that building. It's no mystery to me why there weren't any other squatters. There's a freak living there, stalking the halls, living in its own filth and eating anything that moves, probably even parts of itself. It ate those animals right down to the bone. I can only hope none of those bones were human. When I was growing up, me and my brother Carter spent a week at our grandparents' farm every summer. It was one of those farms in the middle of nowhere, with endless fields of corn and a rickety old barn filled with hay. I was 11 and Carter was 13, which meant he was always trying to act tough. Our grandparents were old school and believed strongly in hard work and an early bedtime. The first few days were kind of fun. We explored the farm and jumped around in the piles of hay in the barn. But boredom hit hard by midweek. That's when Carter got the idea to sneak out at night and walk to the gas station a couple of miles down the road to grab snacks. It was a dumb idea, and I knew it. Grandpa had told us not to wander off the property after dark, but Carter had that nothing bad ever happens attitude that always got us into trouble. And, like an idiot, I went along with it. We waited until the house was quiet, and we were sure our grandparents were asleep. Carter grabbed a flashlight, and we slipped out the back door, careful not to let it bang shut. The cool night air hit me, and for a moment, I thought about turning back. But Carter was already heading down the dirt path, so I followed. The moon was bright enough to fill up the fields on either side of the path. Rows of corn stretched endlessly, their tall stalks swaying in the breeze. About halfway down the road, we passed one of Grandpa's scarecrows. It stood in the middle of the cornfield, backlit by the moon, its burlap sack head and straw-stuffed body casting a shadow over the path. It looked like it had fallen off the cross it hung on and was balancing on its feet. I said it looked kinda creepy, and Carter laughed at me. He said he wasn't scared of a stupid scarecrow. A little farther down, Carter froze, and I bumped into him. I called him a jerk, but he didn't respond. He pointed toward another scarecrow, but this one wasn't like the others. It was shorter, more squat, and there was someone standing next to it. At first, I thought it was Grandpa, maybe checking on the fields, but I realized it wasn't him. It was a woman. She was old, with gray, greasy hair that clung to her face. She wore a tattered dress that looked like it hadn't been washed in decades. Her back was to us, and she was muttering something under her breath. Her hands were on the scarecrow, stroking its burlap head like it was alive. My legs went weak. I begged my brother to turn back. Carter didn't move. He stared at the woman, his jaw clenched. He told me to stop being such a scaredy cat and that he was going to get snacks no matter what. He took one step forward, and the woman suddenly stopped muttering. Her head tilted slightly, like she'd heard us. I held my breath, hoping she'd stay focused on the scarecrow. But then, her head snapped towards us. Her face was pale and wrinkled, her eyes sunken and dark. Her mouth twisted into a wide smile, showing gums where her teeth should have been. She let out a cackling laugh that made my stomach drop. Then, she started running at us. Carter let out a high-pitched scream and spun around. We bolted down the path, the flashlight bouncing wildly in Carter's hand. I could hear her footsteps behind us, the sound of bare feet slapping against dirt. I didn't dare look back. My chest burned and my legs felt like jelly, but fear kept me moving. We reached the house and Carter fumbled with the back door. His hands were shaking so badly he could barely grip the handle. I kept glancing over my shoulder, expecting to see her right behind us. But when I finally looked, she wasn't there. The fields were empty. Carter yanked the door open, and we stumbled inside, slamming it shut behind us. We stood there, gasping for air, listening for any sign of her outside. But all we could hear was the hum of the old refrigerator in the kitchen. Our grandpa came down in his robe. He was pissed at us for sneaking out, so we didn't tell him about the woman. After a thorough talking to, he sent us to bed. Me and Carter lay in our beds, covered up to our chins, thankful to be back inside the safe, locked house. I thought the scary part of the night was over, but then I heard a tapping at the window. I felt the breath get sucked out of my chest. Me and Carter both sat up and looked at each other. We glanced at the window. It was covered with a long red curtain, but there looked to be the shadow of movement behind it. The tapping continued. Carter slipped out of his bed. I hissed at him to get away from the window, but he ignored me. He crept toward it, his hand reached out. Carter yanked back the curtain. Moonlight spilled in the room, and I saw something that still terrifies me to this day. The woman stood at the window, her nose pressed against the glass, and beside her was a scarecrow. Only, it wasn't a scarecrow at all, but a dirty man wearing the clothes off of one of my grandpa's scarecrows. He tapped a grimy finger against the glass, grinning wide. To my horror, I realized that the scarecrow me and Carter had seen standing on its feet was the man in front of us. He'd been watching us. Carter and I both screamed. The two freaks began to cackle. Me and Carter ran to my grandparents' bedroom, but by the time we all got back, they were gone. Me and Carter finally told our grandpa the whole truth. He was understandably upset, but more focused on finding out who those weirdos were. My grandma called the cops while my grandpa talked to us, and they came and looked the whole farm over. They didn't find the old people. The only thing out of order on the farm was one of my grandpa's scarecrows tossed to the ground with its clothes ripped off. Even now, years later, I still think about that night. Every time I visit grandpa's farm, I find myself glancing at the scarecrows, half expecting it to turn into that man and for the woman to appear beside him. I don't know who they were or why they were out there. But one thing's for sure, I'll never walk down that path at night again.